I think we need to start now. 10:07. Then let me quickly deal with apologies before I welcome all of you. We have the Honorable Mandingos Mabika, who's on sick leave. Honorable Minister Dr. Nkosazana Zuma, Dlamini Zuma won't attend because she's busy attending the National Command Council meeting as we speak. Then Deputy Minister Bapela is going to join the meeting, but it's going to be a late connection due to some departmental engagement that is. Dr. Mapaka Tau, the head of the National Disaster Management Center, will not be able to attend the meeting as he has been on prior arranged leave, but Ms. Anne Bruver will be representing the National Disaster Management Center. Then our agenda is going to be as follows. I'm going to welcome all of you. Let me put this up front. We are going to again reconvene on Thursday. This meeting, we have scheduled it for 2 evenings so that we're able to deal with these matters, really. Then I want to up front, then we're going to have the agenda that is as follows. We are going to allow for SA that is going to be led by Mr. Michael Swain. And then South African Religious Forum, though we're not given the name. Then the South African National Christian Forum, the Bishop Josia Mashashane will deal with that. And then the Ecumenical Leadership Council, Pastor Sipho Matlango will deal with that. And then we have the Sunni Ulama Council Gauteng. F. Kamker will deal with that. The Langa Baptist Church is going to be led by Pastor Zondo. And then we have the Baha'i Faith Community of South Africa. I was not given the name of the representative. And then the Muslim Supreme Council of South Africa. And then there is Higher Educational Institution, one person called Asikitipki. And then the Apostolic Faith Mission of South Africa is going to be represented by Pastor M.G. Matlobo. And then there is Gauteng Faith-Based Organization. I'm not given the name. And then we have got Open Circle, that's Del Wallace. And then the Open Serve, Pastor Henrik, I think we are. So there are those who might have not seen our invitation for them to submit presentation. And then after listening to whoever will have presented, there will be issues that they feel they are not adequately addressed on raise with us. I'll plead with those ones who then raise their hands on the platform. You know, on the platform, there's a raise hand option. Then I'll recognize you and give you strictly 3 minutes. This meeting is scheduled to end at 10. We are going to stick on that time of 10 o'clock so that people will be able to rest there. Those who are still going to work and those that they know they need to rest. Otherwise, we are going to be counterproductive. So basically, having said that, then I want to welcome all the attendees that are here. Before I do that, can I then quickly, some might be attending Zoom meetings for the first time. Let's deal with the house rules. I think we both understand this is a parliamentary committee sitting, and then we need to respect the decorum of the house. Always keep your video and microphone muted so that you don't disrupt the proceedings of this committee. Should we find a situation wherein you are continually disrupting the proceeding by not muting your your microphone and your video, then it happens to come here so that it becomes disruptive. We'll ask the meeting admins, the committee section, to then remove you from the meeting. But I'm glad that today we are dealing with men and women of faith. We are not going to have a lot of difficulties to that effect. Like I said, if you want to speak, there's a raise your hand icon. I always look at that. Or you can use the chat icon, wherein you can type, like some people have already greeted me as the chairperson. I can see that. So you can always type things there. We'll consider that. The members of parliament can consider that. Also, the committee section will be looking at that. I also normally look at the chat box to see what people are saying there. So what is critical? You raise your hand. I'm raising this for those who are attending the meetings for the first time in this platform. And then secondly, mute your microphone, mute your video. The other thing that I want to raise with you, this proceeding is being recorded live. It's in Parliament on Panel Channel 408 and all the other parliamentary media platforms. So it will be very critical and crucial that you make sure wherever you are attending the meetings, don't allow people to be closer to you or moving around on your background, because it's a bit disruptive. So I should think, having said that, we are all clear, and then we'll adhere to the meeting rules. I don't necessarily have to call you to order. I think the team will be ready if you are causing a disruption to just remove you from the meeting. Having said that, I just first want to confirm the attendance of them. And then there are those who have logged in here as telephone numbers. It's very difficult to identify a person with a telephone number unless it is an audio calling. But I think it will be prudent that you also write your name than keeping your number as it is. And then you find there are two people, the other one is AD, the other one is Edward's iPhone. Can we make sure that we rename your gadget with your names? Because if you see us, all of us, yes, members of parliament, we are able to read that in our news. We've got Honorable Becky Hadewe. You're able to read that we've got Honorable Silas Brink. You're able to read that we've got Honorable Digeredi Direko. You're able to read that you've got Honorable I.M. Groenewald, and you're able to read who's the other member. You're also able to read that the Minister, Deputy Minister Obed Bapela, is in our midst. You can see that. So I should think, let's do that, all of us. And I want to welcome you, Deputy Minister. We had obtained your apology that you will be joining the meeting a bit late. Honorable Pritika Banchava, you are also in the meeting. I wanted to confirm, is there any member that I've omitted that I didn't see you? There's also a standing apology from Honorable Kou, who's also of sick. I've also got an apology from Honorable Spies. She's also not well for tonight. So those are the members that are in our midst. Having said that, I should think whoever will be leading the delegation, you can then take the opportunity also to introduce the members that you have brought along from your organization. And then those that have just joined from various religious fraternities, then as and when they raise their hands, will be able to then recognize them. I want to also thank you for attending this meeting. Thus far, I've got almost 52 participants. I want to say this, that we had scheduled to convene this meeting during the previous term, around April 2021. However, as and when we're trying to solicit inputs, some religious organizations felt that the time afforded to them to make their submissions was insufficient. We therefore deemed it fair to reschedule the meeting to afford everyone an opportunity to then prepare their inputs. Unfortunately, some organizations and individuals do not seem to have received the commitment that this meeting has been rescheduled from April to June. Hence, there are still complaints about short notice. But what I want to also say, as you might have heard me greeting some of my colleagues, we are on constituency period. Parliament is on recess, but we deemed it proper because of the urgency of the matter that we also apply for permission to sit during the constituency period so that we are able then to then engage with you. For those who still have complaints about the short notice, it will be prudent that you also then on the chat group now, you write your details with your contact numbers, including your email details, so that in future, we're able to also invite you on time. But I think we want to upfront regret this communication mishap and always say that there's always room for improvement. We are spreading the meeting over 2 evenings, as you heard me saying earlier. It's tonight and Thursday night. Because Parliament is currently on recess and members are expected to undertake constituency work during the day, because some of you might be complaining why are we holding the meetings at night. Because like I have indicated, Parliament is currently on recess and members are expected to undertake constituency work during the day. Hence, we are also, to show our level of commitment, we say, let's not postpone until August. Let's then meet in the evening. When I'm trying to open this meeting tonight, colleagues and all our distinguished guests, I want to reaffirm the importance of the religious sector as a key stakeholder in the context of disaster management. Ourselves as a committee, we acknowledge the vital role the religious community is playing to encourage the behavioral changes necessary to reduce the spread of the current pandemic. I've seen a lot of you, I think, a day before yesterday, I also see you, Bishop Mpumulwane, doing the same. And then we also want to acknowledge that churches and other religious organizations have been at the forefront during this crisis. We've seen most of you assisting with food distribution, providing social work, providing counseling services, supporting the victims of gender-based violence, and providing care and relief for the most vulnerable. And we want to say bravo to all of you who have been seen on the forefront, assisting the government to make sure that, it has struck us unexpectedly. Despite the enormous contribution, the prevailing sentiment from yourselves as religious organizations have been written to us as the committee is that the government is not taking the religious sector seriously. We are informed that the administration of the Disaster Management Act in connection with the COVID-19 pandemic has targeted the religious sector unfairly so. The oral submission we are about to receive will elaborate this further. A number of the submissions that we have received as the committee point to some of aspects of the Disaster Management Act that needs to be reviewed. The committee is also considering a draft members' bill that proposes a similar exercise, which I want to urge also yourselves as this religious community to participate in. You must watch the press. Parliament will soon publish the draft bill for public comments with the view of us soliciting the input of all interested parties. I think this is the opportunity that yourself must never meet. Once we've publicized that draft bill, it will also enable us as a committee to determine the extent to which the amendments of the Act are necessary. So yourself now as the religious sector wish to submit additional inputs in this regard. You are welcome and you are also encouraged to do so. Ourselves as the committee, as the custodian of the Disaster Management Act, we want to assure you, fellow religious leaders, we are committed to realizing a workable piece of legislation that will respond adequately and justly to the national disasters without infringing unreasonably on the rights and the freedoms of the citizens of this country. The input from yourself as religious sector will be very much vital in this regard. And then I want to welcome all of you to this gathering tonight. Having said that, then I have seen also that the DG of Traditional Affairs is here. I tried to greet him. He didn't respond. But I have seen he's also in our midst. And the chairperson of the commission and the CEO of the commission, they are also here. So then for tonight, we are going to deal with your presentations. And then Thursday, then the minister will also be in attendance and the deputy minister is here. He will also be listening to your input so that as and when the department and the commission have to make an input next week, then we are all at par. Having said that, before I allow Mr. Michael Swain for SA to attend, I've seen now our colleague, Honorable Buthelezi, is in the meeting. Welcome, Honorable Buthelezi. Also, our colleague, Honorable Swart, it's also in the meeting. We want to welcome you as well, Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome, Honorable Buthelezi. Can I hand over to you, Michael? I'm giving you maximum 12 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
We have your presentation. We've gone through, we want you, but I want you to, for those who didn't have the benefit of receiving your presentation, to hear what are your issues. Over to you, Mr. Swain.
Thank you, Chair. Very much appreciate this opportunity. As I'm sure you will be aware, because...
And I see you. I've seen the logo now, but I want to see the person who's making the presentation.
It's a little dark.
I haven't seen you for quite some time. Okay, proceed.
It's good to see you, and thank you so much for this opportunity to present to you and to the committee. As I'm sure you will be aware, 4SA Freedom of Religion South Africa, we are a legal advocacy group, and obviously that means that our major focus is on the protection and the promotion of the religious freedom rights that we have under the Constitution. And evidently, the major impact of lockdown, of course, was that for reasons which are permissible, the rights granted under our Constitution were abrogated, and abrogated obviously severely, and to a large extent, or to a significant extent perhaps, remain abrogated. And from the very beginning, the position of 4SA was that whatever the situation is, that the religious sector, the religious community, must be dealt with fairly and equitably. It must not be treated differently from other sectors of the society. And unfortunately, what we realized from the very word go, when the original lockdown levels were promulgated, was that the religious workers, religious sector generally, was not recognized as essential workers. And it was only really when we got to the level three that we were given by that stage by the president the verbal assurance that the religious community, and we do appreciate your recognition of the work that the religious community has done and the contribution that they've made. It was only at that stage that they were recognized by the president as essential workers. But despite multiple attempts, that has still not been, so far as we are aware, formally introduced and formally corrected and amended. And so as we sit today, religious workers potentially, were we to go back to a very strict level of lockdown, and God forbid that we should have to, but the fact remains is that religious workers are not formally recognized. The major impact, of course, has been on the religious community itself and how they have been able to deal with the situations that they faced. And I believe that there will be many people who are directly involved in the faith community who will be making submissions on how it has impacted them. And therefore, I don't want to take up any time saying things which have not been our direct experience, although obviously we've been keenly aware of some of the issues that people have been facing and religious organizations have been facing. But suffice it to say that the biggest concern that Freedom of Religion South Africa has had has been with what we saw as unfair discrimination against the religious community relative to other sectors of society. And obviously that culminated in a lawsuit that we initiated, unfortunately, and with great regret, back in February this year. And the situation there, of course, was that under the lockdown levels that were promulgated and then extended in the December-January period, the religious community was banned absolutely from a meeting, whereas other similar sectors of society, and we quoted obviously the casinos and shopping centers and various conference centers and so on, they were allowed to meet, albeit in a limited way, but there was a complete lockdown on the religious community. And we believe that this was something which was unacceptable, because under the Constitution, you cannot, we believe, and our submission is, treat the religious sector unfairly, particularly because the religious sector, of course, is specifically protected by Section 15 of the Constitution, which is over and above all the other rights enjoyed under other sections of the Constitution, and particularly Section 9. So we were unfortunately in a position whereby we felt it was necessary to engage in legal action against the Cogta minister and others in the Johannesburg High Court. And immediately before that case was to be heard, which was to be on the 2nd of February, on the 1st of February, the president then amended the lockdown level restrictions on the faith community and equalized it. But nevertheless, that case is progressing, and it will be, we believe, heard, certainly we trust, in the course of the latter half of this year. There were three additional applicants, as well as 4SA, the SANCF and Solidaritate, and also the Muslim Lawyers Association. And all but one we know have now filed their heads of argument, and the state will then file theirs. And in the meantime, it's probably worth pointing out that all over the world, similar cases have been brought, similar litigation.
Mr. Kent, is it possible to load the presentation? But you can, yeah.
Unfortunately,
or can I ask that? Children, can I find out from you whether it's possible? There's one Sipozo Ndi. Can I plead with the person called Sipozo Ndi? Can Sipozo Ndi Suppose only can suppose only mute the microphone, please. I'm pleading with suppose only, or I'll ask the team to remove suppose only if it's a bit disruptive. Admin, can you deal with that microphone of suppose only, please? Mr. Swain, now your presentation is on the screen. You can talk to it. They will help you move it. Yes, you can proceed. Go down. I'll tell you where he was. Yes. Yes. That's number 17. That's where you can proceed from. Over to you, Michael. Is Michael still here? We seem to have lost him. Colleagues, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, we have lost him. Then let's go to the next speaker. When he reconnects, he's going to start where he ended. Can I then, Shirin, can you load the next presentation on the one that you have received? So that we can quickly, as I'm calling the next speaker. Yes. This is the South African Religious Forum presentation. Who is representing the South African Religious Forum? Do we have anyone? We can move. If there's no anybody, maybe they want us to consider their written submission. I'll confirm that we got that. Then, Pastor Josiah Mashashan, are you ready as loading your presentation?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Yes. Shirin, yes, the pastor. We'll see
good evening.
You at the corner here. Yes, they are busy loading your presentation. You can be doing the introductions if there's anyone you've brought along. Yeah, the platform is yours, Bishop Mashashan.
Thank you much. We really appreciate the honor of giving our submission this evening. This is Bishop Mashashane, as you correctly said, from South African National Christian Forum. We are the forum or the sector that is representing a number of religious denomination, about 240 at the moment. This will be categorized as small churches, medium churches, and mega churches. I am not just going to follow word by word of our submission, which I believe you have already gone through, but I will bit summarize it. We have been affected a lot by the COVID, which have obviously affected every sector. But what worried us a lot is that our government unfairly discriminated the religious sector compared to other sectors. Our brother has already mentioned, I mean, Michael Swain. South African National Christian Forum had to even initiate legal action against the minister of COCTA, because even to reach them or to be heard was very difficult. After sending a number of requests to at least have an engagement, we end up with no option but to approach the High Court in order to set aside the irrational regulation. And yes, as our brother Michael Swain have already articulated, their structure, which is FOSA, joined us to support our motion, and we were supported also by Muslim Lawyers Association, which obviously, in the eve of having the matter heard in court on the 2nd of February, then the evening of the 1st of February, the president made the relaxation. But yes, we are still even now feel that Christian or religious sector is taken advantage. We are not consulted on the matters which directly affect the religious sector. We always get shocked when we hear the pronouncement, and that is indeed a discrimination. The second leg is that our government, especially the spheres of government, in enforcing the regulation, we find that there are a lot of inconsistency. For an example, when politicians are having gathering or accompanying their leaders to court, you know, to support them in court, then there is no enforcement of regulation. But when a church, mere people who are not armed, are just gathering to pray, we saw it happening in Sibukeni. Police went in full force. We had a lady, an old lady who was also shot by the police there. We saw it happening in Soweto, when Pastor Mukubu was attacked, about 11 metro police vehicles that attacked the church when they are praying. So we feel that indeed there is a lot of inconsistency. The rules or the regulation which are implemented or laid are only selective. They only work against the religious sector. And we came, yes, into a conclusion that we are discriminated merely because maybe we don't contribute a lot on the GDP. Because what is the logic of denying people to worship, and the same people you allow them not to come to church but to go to a casino for gambling? You deny them to come to church, but you allow them to go to, cinema for entertainment. In the church, they only come once in a week. But casino, it's almost 24 hours or whenever the curfew will kick in. These same people in the taxi, they are sitting shoulder to shoulder, which is full loaded. But when it comes to a church, because we are, the lamp, then we are always to be slaughtered. No negotiation whatsoever. Number three, we know that, yes, we are living in a society which is very much, unfortunately, imbalanced. So we've got our members who suffered, who starved. You know, these food parcels which you're demonstrating, we only saw them on the TV. Our members
Bishop,
never get food.
Bishop Masasane?
Yes.
Bishop Masasane?
I'm here.
Bishop Masasane?
Hello?
Bishop Masasane?
Yes, Mama. I can hear you.
Bishop Masasane.
I can hear you.
Colleagues.
I can hear you.
I can hear the bishop as well.
Same here. I think the problem might be with the chair. We can hear the bishop loud and clear.
Bishop Masasane, you can try to switch off the video.
No, only you can hear me. Everybody can hear me.
I think you are having some connectivity challenges.
No, it's only
yes,
on your
if you
part.
Can switch off your video and continue speaking. Switch off.
My video is off. Honorable Chair, my video is off. I believe there's a problem on your side.
No, you are audible, Bishop.
Yeah, maybe there's a problem with the chair. Must I continue or wait for the chair?
Proceed. The chair is here. Proceed.
Yeah. Continue, sir. Everybody.
There's no two chairpersons. I'm here. You must proceed. Albelma, I can mute your microphone, please.
Okay. Ndikolivu.
Can I plead with Albelma Aki to mute his microphone, please?
Thank you very much.
Yes,
I was still saying in terms of, hence we're talking about the unfair discrimination of the sector. All other sectors, including the artist for that matter, the football players, you mentioned them, they had a support of the government, you know, when there was a lockdown because they couldn't continue with their day-to-day activities, which makes their income. But for the religious sector, nothing whatsoever was ever arranged. People who are employed, they were getting UIF. The pastors or the religious workers or practitioners, when they go to apply for that, they don't qualify because they've never been registered as UIF contributors. We're talking about what we call secured loan in the banks. That was only for other businesses, but for religious sector was not. Then when you question about this inconsistency of the government, we could be told that the casinos and other sectors, it's because we have to also look, balance the livelihood. Forgetting that also religious sector, as a sector on its own, it's having people who are serving on, who are taking it as an employment, or they are rendering service, and indeed they live from that. As I'm speaking now in my conclusion, we've got a number of pastors whom even now we are assisting to fight in the court. The court orders were issued for the evictions because they could not afford to pay their rent. They could not afford to put a meal for their children on the table. But the government says nothing. So you ask yourself a question as to whether this government is just antichrist government. It's against the Christians or the religious sector. Because we've got no door to be heard. In my conclusion, as I'm saying, we feel like maybe we don't fit or we are not counted in the government, of which we are 85% of Christians in South Africa, but yet we are taken advantage. We cannot be consulted. Decisions are made that affect us directly, but nobody bothers to talk to us. When we file our motion in court, it was requested that the minister must also, in her answering affidavit, give the minutes of the meeting where decisions to close churches were made, so that we can also see who are those religious sector that the president is referring to that has agreed that the churches must be closed. And the minister failed to give such minutes that would support the vision. So indeed, we have been affected. Conferences were closed. Yes, we understand. We suffered financial loss. We've got the lives that were taken. You know, we won from Nyaube and drugs. But when the lockdown kick on, obviously they go back to their old life because obviously there was no more church activities. So it's a number, the church has suffered in a number of ways. What makes it worse is that government never show any solidarity for the church practitioners or religious practitioners. We had no support. As I'm talking right now, we've got few number of cases which we can mention. Few pastors who were not strong enough to sit and look at their children studying, who committed suicide simply because of what they were going through. And that has not yet come to an end, as you are aware that the mega churches are still not yet open since they closed the last year. But we've got no any support from the government. The religious sector, they are the forefront in every situation. They do consultation. They are the one who pray even for those people, whether is it corona or what. We are there to support the family, to give a moral support. The funerals, you can't have a funeral without a religious leader. We are right there. We have to bless the grave where we're going to bury. But government decided even to give, the members of the media. I was watching when the president accepted and gave that preference. Members of the media are now given priority that they need vaccination because they are reporting on the matters, including the COVID. But we, being the forefront, very close, dealing with the situation in the ground every day, we are not considered or given that preference that we can be vaccinated together with the health workers. Instead, we've got the traditional healers granted that, but we were denied that we can't get that as essential workers. So in all due respect, all that I've alluded, it is what shows that during the COVID-19, yes, it was the time where our government was exposed that it is an anti-Christ, anti-God government. They cannot pay respect to the religious. And I want to thank you for this engagement, hoping that maybe in the future or something will be done. We have seen it happening in all sectors,
Some of them, yes, we saw the artist, their money was eaten, but it's appearing. But what happened? What about the religious sector that we are always, you know, taking decisions? The time is now that religious sectors must come together and we have to speak in one voice and say nothing about us without us. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you so much, Bishop Mashashane. Reverend Ralph Stender, you are from SA Religious Forum. Can I ask Shirin to put back that presentation from the SA Religious Forum, please, so that I can give reference Ralph Stender a platform to speak. Can I plead with one able Mahachi to mute his microphone, please? I'm pleading. Abel Mahachi, mute your microphone, please. Your microphone cannot be forever on. Can I plead again with Abel Mahachi? Otherwise, I'll ask admin that.
Chair, my microphone is off, Chair.
No, it's
my microphone
on.
Is off, Chair.
It's on. It's only now that you've muted it. It has been on. I'm not accusing you. It has been on. Over to you, Reverend Stender.
Good evening, Chairperson and all protocol observe. Yes, I am a Reverend Ralph Stender and from the South African Religious Forum. But tonight we are not going to speak. I just want to say, yes, we are in the house, but with the next session, we will be speaking. And then, yes, so that is basically the message. And thank you very much for the opportunity that you give us and all the religious leaders in matters that concerns them very much. Thank you very much.
Okay, Reverend Stendel, I saw your hand was up. Can you lower it then? Can you please lower your hand so that we can move faster? Lower your hand on the icon, please. Just lower your hand, Reverend Stendel. The next speaker on my agenda list should be Pastor Sipho Mahlangu from the Ecumenical Leadership Council.
Thank you.
Pastor Mahlangu, ready?
Yes, I am, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm not sure if I'm audible enough.
Yes, you are. I can even see you. I didn't have to order you to put on your video. Thank you, Pastor Mahlangu.
Yes, thank you very much, and greetings to you, Honorable Mutambi, and greetings to the COCTA Parliamentary Committee with us today, and special greetings to the religious leaders and organization here present today. And thank you for the invitation, particularly to send our comments on the impact of disaster management regulation in the religious sector. I think having listened to the previous speakers, we share very much the same sentiments with what we feel has been happening in the religious sector in particular. And I just want to quickly make the reference on the Section 9 of our Constitution and 15, 18, and 31. I know I'm speaking to the parliamentary committee that is very much aware of our Constitution very well, that we feel that the religious sector, we need to be able to be given that liberty to express our religious rights in the manner that we worship, particularly within the proper framework of the Constitution. And to some degree, we, as the Constitution say, we feel that the Disaster Management Act, as it is, it needs to be reasonable, it needs to be rational, it needs to be justifiable, and also to be proportional in the manner that it is implemented in particular. And the effect of which is the negative precedence that we think the government can have of it being unreasonable to the religious sector, irrational to the religious sector, unjustifiable to the religious sector. And our colleagues have already alluded of the certain areas that we feel it is. And truly, it is our feeling that the manner as it is right now, the disaster management regulation is implemented more specifically, it is definitely targeting the religious sector. And we would like to plead that as it stands right now, we're not sure, because I was going through the Disaster Management Act of 2002 in its totality. We are not sure whether it clearly describes the role of the police and the role of the military force within when there is the disaster management. Except when you look into the gazetted amendments that the Minister of COCTA in 2020 has created that space for the role of the police. And that's what we find being a challenge and it being arbitrary, more so when it comes to the manner in which it is implemented to the church. And this is our submission, and I'll quickly just read them as we submitted to you, Honorable Minister, and to the Portfolio Committee, that as the Ecumenical Leadership Council, the Disaster Management Act is not expressly encapsulated in the supreme law of the Republic of South Africa, which has an effect that the religious sector in its nature is not constitutionally protected in terms of Disaster Management Act implementation. What do we mean by that? I think the bishop prior to me has alluded that the religious sector, we find that in many ways we are excluded. We are excluded financially when there's some relief funds that are there, and the church or the pastors are excluded. And we are excluded also in understanding that the religious leaders or the sector is playing a very important role when it comes to be in the forefront of the COVID-19. And I'm not going to go to details because the previous speaker has alluded to those details as to what do we mean by the church being in the forefront. We are in the forefront. We are on the ground. Pastors are the ones who are taking care of the destitute people. We know that there's people have been retrenched. People are not well. And pastors play that role. The church in particular. Or let me not say the church, because I want to include the entire religious sector as it is, that it is the only sector that every Sunday, once a week, we come together and stand in one gap praying over what is happening in the world or in this nation, to be specific, about this COVID-19. And us being excluded, us being out of because of this Disaster Management Act as it is really painful, because you find that pastors can't be in the forefront. Pastors at the moment as it is are not really regarded as the first line, you know. The previous speaker spoke about the jabs of the COVID-19 that are received, which we advocate very strongly that the religious leaders should also be in line of receiving those jabs. We are glad that those who are over 60 can go and get them, but we believe that there's a many pool of pastors who are playing a very crucial role who are not receiving those jabs. And it is also our call and our request that in the manner that this act is implemented, the Portfolio Committee needs to see very strongly that it is not excluding the church and the duties of the church. The church is employing people, the church is playing role. And when you completely shut down the church, not only because this act is not only shutting down the congregation of people, it's also shutting down the administration part of the church, which has a detrimental effect in many ways to those people that are part of the church. We have submitted we've sent our submissions. I'm not going to go in details. We share the same sentiments, and we are pleading with the committee that they need to strongly look into that so that the church doesn't become excluded in that. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not going to take much time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Pastor Matangu. Thank you so much. It's much appreciated. The next speaker on my list, Shirin, can you be loading the presentation? It should be the Sunni Ulama Council of Gauteng.
Good day, Honorable Chair, respected members. I greet you this evening on something which is extremely important in terms of dialogue, and we wish to place our gratitude and our thanks for having given this opportunity. Let me first introduce who Sunni Ulama Council is. Sunni Ulama Council is an Islamic or Muslim theological association. We are operating all inland provinces of the country. We have previously engaged with COCTA, specifically with regard to self-regulation in the religious sector. And we need also, as a quick guide, to understand what the principles are of Islam, specifically with regard to the pandemic. The principles Islam teaches us is the protection and the sanctity of life, the protection against disease and potential disease. We acknowledge that cure should be searched for, but that cure should be holistic, and in that being holistic, it would require spiritual healing as part of the process. So it would be the physical body, the psychological body, and the spiritual being which needs to be treated together. We also believe that an environment must be enabled in order to make it possible for life to be safe during the pandemic. We do realize that the pandemic which was experienced and still being experienced is something new, something unique. And as a result, we expected errors to be made and errors which is understandable. We also wish to make it very clear that in our minds, that the good intentions of the governing party with ministers of the DMA is not in question, nor has it ever been questioned. We, however, do acknowledge that despite the good intentions, there were certain errors which had been made. We refer to the Disasters Management Act as such, which is very sweeping in powers, which is very one of the most draconian laws which we can find. The fact that that was used rather than any other act is subject to certain speculation, certain arguments, certain debates. But we will not go into that because it would not really be substantial or is not substantiate the current position. However, what we do wish to say about the DMA is that it should be rational and it should be proportional in its application. And this is where we actually find certain problems where it was not. Previous speakers have spoken about, for example, the casino being allowed to have X amount of people while at the same time mosques, churches, synagogues, temples were closed. There seems to be a misunderstanding of the role which religion and spirituality plays with regard to a counter or to a assisting in the solution towards the pandemic. The DMA has also got certain limitations, and it cannot unjustifiably do encroachment. For example, the right to equal treatment. the right not to be unfairly discriminated against on the grounds of religion and belief, the right to freedom of religion and belief, the right to peaceful assembly, and the right to freedom of association. This obviously is read in, together with Section 31 of the Constitution. However, what becomes very important is that we do acknowledge that some of these rights had to be sacrificed. What we do question is whether that was rational, whether that was proportional. And the question arises, what brought about the actual promulgation, the actual suggestion, the actual regulation? To us, it doesn't seem as though it was done on a pure scientific basis, because there is no scientific proof to show that religious gatherings are more dangerous than other gatherings, which was allowed under the DMA. And if we look at, for example, that the United States of America had also faced the challenge, and their courts ruled that there is no scientific basis on which to have it done. Then, in terms of what we would actually like to recommend, firstly, we could like to recommend that the religious work and the religious workers be classified as essential work. The second thing is that the religious activity must be seen as no different to other aspects of society or societal activities and should be treated accordingly. And lastly, directions and or decisions must have current, reliable, and provable science as a benchmark before implementation. What I would like to conclude with is this. We appreciate, as a faith community, the introduction made as to the value of the faith community in South Africa. However, as previous speakers have said, we don't see the reality of what has been said. We understand the appreciation being mentioned, but we don't see the encouragement, we don't see the fruits, and we don't see equal treatment. I thank you and all the colleagues for giving us this opportunity to present this. Thank you.
Before you leave, how do you pronounce your findings so that I call you properly in future?
Kamkar.
Kamke.
Yeah.
Kamka.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kamka.
Thank you.
Sincerely appreciated. Can we, I saw a note from Pastor Zondo that you are going to present next time. Is it what you say? There was a, on the chat group, there was something like that. I'm raising it because this was the turn for Langa Baptist Church. Is it an indication that Pastor Zondo is no longer here? Should I move? Yeah, I'd seen that note. It seems not to be here anymore. Then the next speakers will come from the Baha'i Faith Community of South Africa. Is there any representative here tonight? I was not given a name.
Honorable Chair, greetings to you. My name is Mlingana Poswayo, and I represent the South African Baha'i community.
Can you first put on your video so that we see you? There we go. You can proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
I don't think you have connectivity problem. You can continue with your video on because this is being broadcasted.
Thank you.
South Africans want to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Proceed, Mr. Posayo.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Michael Swain, I see you are here. I'll give you, be the last one to finish your presentation. I've seen you've been back for quite some time. Don't stress. We're almost there. Over to you, Mr. Posayo.
Honorable Chair, ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to express deep love and affection from the Baha'i community of South Africa for you all. Let me also express our gratitude and appreciation for having been included in this meeting organized by Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. I am quite inspired, Chair, that you have convened this meeting, and it has made me to reflect on a short scripture from the Baha'i faith about the importance of government consulting the people. And I'd like to just quote it. It reads, "The institutions of society will succeed in eliciting and directing the potentialities latent in the consciousness of the world's peoples, to the extent that the exercise of authority is governed by principles that are in harmony with the evolving interests of a rapidly maturing human race. Such principles include the obligation of those in authority to win the confidence, respect, and genuine support of those whose actions they seek to govern, to consult openly and to the fullest extent possible with all whose interests are affected by decisions being arrived at, to assess in an objective manner both the real needs and the aspirations of the communities they serve, to benefit from scientific and moral advancement in order to make appropriate use of the community's resources, including the energies of its members. No single principle of effective authority is so important as giving priority to building and maintaining unity among the members of a society and the members of its administrative institutions." Close quote. Honorable Chair, the Baha'i faith does not have a clergy or a priest. However, to administer its affairs, it has elected and appointed institutions. The leadership of the Baha'i faith in South Africa is under the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of South Africa, which is the supreme body governing the affairs of the Baha'i faith in South Africa. And this body is elected once a year. And let me also say, Chair, that the level 5 lockdown restrictions affected the Baha'i community as it affected other communities, especially as I've mentioned the election process of this supreme body, which was not able to take place in person over a year ago. The Baha'i community was grateful that this year it could hold its national convention in person due to the ability to convene a gathering of delegates to elect its membership. So, Chair, the sudden restriction on religious gatherings proved challenging for our community, and online gatherings showed that the community could not entirely be inclusive because of the digital divide in our country. In instances that some members of the Baha'i faith did not have funds, the funds were made available for data so that they could participate online. It proved to be a challenge because in many instances, the connectivity was the problem, even when financial resources had been made available. So, Chair, the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of South Africa continued to guide the membership of the Baha'i Faith in South Africa according to the lockdown levels which the government was guiding the country as a whole. So at the moment, we are grateful that the government has allowed the religious sector to be able to have in-person gatherings whilst taking care of the protocols to keep safe, such as wearing masks and sanitizing and social distancing. Because we believe that with these rules and regulations put in place, communities can continue to worship and to convene under safe conditions. So we, at this stage, have no challenges in terms of convening in-person gatherings because we are adhering to the levels that have been placed by the government. Because last year throughout the level 5 and level 4, it was very difficult for the community to meet in person. But now the community is meeting in adhering to the government restrictions. So Chair, we'd like to encourage the government to continue guiding our nation as it has been doing, and to continue to allow a limited number of religious gatherings in order to keep all of us safe, but also to ensure that members of the various faith communities are able to meet. I thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Poswayo. Thank you so much for the presentation. The committee secretary has alerted me that she's having difficulty in loading the presentation. That's why you didn't see the presentation coming. Can I get a nod if there's somebody who's representing the Muslim Supreme Council of South Africa? I was not given a name. The Muslim Supreme Council of South Africa. Anyone? Since there's no one, my apologies. I'll have to move to the next presentation that should be done by the Higher Educational Institution by one Mr. Alex Asaki Tikip. Over to you, Educational Institution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope you can hear me. Alex Asaki Tikpi, with IENSA Force in Johannesburg, formerly the Monash University here in South Africa. I want to first of all express force so that at least we can come together, share ideas, and think of ways that we can move the country forward, especially within the context of the COVID-19. I think the previous speakers have made very important points. And it is important that we also take all this into consideration. I am particularly concerned about the situation purely from an academic perspective. And within the academic framework, I also look at the situation on ground in terms of the reality that we face today in the country. I think first and foremost, we need to realize that all segments of the society, all social institutions play important roles in the society. The religious institution, the family institution, educational institution, economic institution, and so on. And it is important, therefore, that we recognize what each of these institutions, what roles they play, and how they collectively ensure that there is progress, there is peace, and there is unity in the society. So we cannot divorce one social institution from the others. And I think that is a point that previous speakers have talked about, especially when they were making comparisons with other social institutions, especially the economic institution. However, I think one of the key points that we need to take into consideration is the fact that while we recognize the contribution of each institution, their members, and for example, there's a high level of intimate interaction because of the need to join faith together and to relate to the supernatural. That is a bit different from the economic institution, where transaction is usually superficial and therefore interactions can easily be regulated. In the case of faith-based institutions, usually when members become ecstatic, when members begin to worship, sometimes it is difficult to also regulate their behavior, their actions, and that becomes a little bit difficult to manage. And we have to understand the processes that are involved in religious gatherings. So when we compare religious gatherings to economic gatherings or educational gatherings, the comparisons may not necessarily be the true reflection of what is going on in the society. So I think that we have to take that into consideration, even though I understand the emotions that go with our congregation, what we do, the passion we have for our members as well as for the society. We have to balance the need to worship, the need to ensure that even those that we are trying to encourage to worship, they are also safe, and how we can begin to see the best way we can ensure that we do not pose risks to others in the society. And that is where I think that government begins to play a very, very important role, because government safeguards the security of individuals and protects individuals within the society. So for me, therefore, I think that while we begin to listen to presentations, the question that comes to our mind is how best do we navigate these very complex interactions that go on in religious organizations? How best do we protect our members? We have to realize that whatever we do, we must take our members into consideration. What is the best interest do we have to take decisions so that we do not only consider the very purpose of worship, but also to ensure that we protect our members. So when we begin to talk about the whole idea of regulation, I don't think we should begin to look at it as a punitive measure against religious groups. And someone made reference to the government as antichrist. I think it's a very harsh word to use. I don't think government is deliberately enjoying the whole idea of putting punitive measures to punish a section of the society. That is not a wise thing, if that's what government is trying to do. But I don't think that is what government is trying to do. Government is acting in good faith, but if we think that government is overstepping or is becoming overbearing, then this is a forum for us to make the presentation. And that is what we are doing. So in my submission, I think that we must balance our passion for our activities and our passion for our members. This is only a temporary measure. I don't think this is a permanent thing. It's trying to manage a disaster. It's managing a pandemic to ensure that people are safe, people are protected. And I think that as religious leaders, we must take it upon ourselves to see how best we can protect our members. I know a whole lot of religious organizations, churches, mosques, and so on, they have followed the protocol. They have tried to ensure that they are strict with members so that they protect themselves and ensure that in so many ways the virus does not spread in their gathering. And this is highly commendable. And that is where I think we need to find a meeting point, a convergent point where we begin to see how best we should be able to manage this crisis. It's a crisis that I think if we are level-headed, if we consider the pros and cons, and we consider all sides, I think we can come to a mutual agreement which will be beneficial to the church members, to the mosques, and other religious groups, as well as the society at large. It's becoming more and more fearful that a third wave might just be much more than what we had anticipated, especially as we were about to celebrate the complete management of the pandemic. So now this is the time we must all join hands together. We must be reasonable. We must be altruistic so that at the end of the day, whatever decision we arrive at is not because we say someone has won and someone has lost. The conclusion should be that we have taken a decision. The whole aim of ensuring that lives are protected and members of the society are protected. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that research input. We are happy we're having you here as an academic as well. It's much appreciated, Alex. Can we then allow the apostolic Faith Mission of South Africa, which is led by Pastor M.G. Matlovo, to present. Over to you, Pastor Matlovo. There are some of the religious leaders that have joined us after we have made the opening remarks, And I've also noted the hands that are up for those who didn't submit their name to speak. I've noted them here, Yuliemi calling them by names. For those that have joined us late, we had said that whoever wants to make a submission, who feels that the speakers that have made submission, I'll give you strictly at the end of the submissions, the written submissions, 3 minutes each. You can just raise your hands on the platform so that I can note you. And you're also welcome. I see there's a lot of religious leaders that join the meeting later. You're welcome. Don't feel isolated. We appreciate your coming. Can I then hand over to the Apostolic Faith Mission of South Africa? I was given the name of Pastor M.G. Matlow. Is he here or not? Anyone from the Apostolic Faith Mission of South Africa, or should I skip? Welcome, Honorable Mpumza, and welcome the Deputy Chairperson of the Commission. Michael, are you ready to complete your presentation in the meantime? Mr. Swain?
Yes, ma'am. I'm very happy to do so. Thank you for your kindness in giving me the opportunity. Apologies for the drop of the connection earlier.
Sure.
I think perhaps to pick up where I left
almost
off.
On paragraph 17, when we asked for the slide presentation, you were talking about the court battles.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
It was 16.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just to continue, obviously we have made every effort and we continue to make every effort to work together, particularly to ensure that the religious community is aware of the lockdown regulations and the impact and how they affect them. And we regularly update these regulations so that people know what they can and cannot do. So we are trying to serve both the religious community and government in that respect. But to return to our case, and maybe we can skip forward a little bit in our notes because I believe time is precious for everybody. We have noted that on an international level, there has been many cases now where the courts have said that in the absence of evidence which demonstrates that the religious gatherings are in fact and indeed more likely to be vectors of transmission than other vectors, government regulations should not specifically treat them differently. And we've noted that obviously in South Africa, that has indeed been the case. And in fact, even at present, despite the fact that the religious community has very stringent sanitation, social distancing and health protocols applied to it, there are no similar regulations in place, for example, at workplaces and in other limited business premises, rather, obviously including supermarkets and grocery stores and produce markets and pharmacies. They do not have to be limited to 50% of their floor space, for example. So we obviously respect the very strict protocols that need to apply and that have indeed applied throughout this to the religious sector. But we would like to point out that there has been no evidence anywhere that we can find on a global basis of religious gatherings having been super spreaders. And therefore, it is difficult to understand why the religious sector continues to be subject to greater restrictions than other sectors of society, which are, of course, allowed to operate at 50% of capacity, or even in some instances at 100% of capacity. The other thing which is important to note in our lawsuit is that we do believe that, and the relief that we're seeking is the government's complete ban on religious gatherings in the December-January period was indeed unconstitutional. And specifically, we would like to have a ruling that it is unconstitutional to place more stringent restrictions on religious gatherings than on other gatherings of a similar nature. And lastly, that the regulations must and should recognize religious workers as essential workers. The very important principle that we point out is Section 36 of the Constitution, which, as I mentioned at the beginning of our presentation, does allow rights under the Constitution to be limited. But at all times, such limitation, and particularly pertaining to religious gatherings and the regulations that are issued and have been issued to restrict religious freedom rights, must at all times be rational, reasonable, and justifiable in terms of Section 36. And in particular, therefore, and this has been raised by other speakers, any restrictions should be based upon scientific data, which we have not seen evidence of, despite the fact that it has been requested, and that those restrictions should obviously go no further than is absolutely necessary to achieve government's stated health goals. And we would also, ask that this would be considered in terms of a letter that we wrote on the 30th of March, because, as you will recall, the regulations which were put in place, which restricted gatherings, were supposedly subject to review within a 15-day period. And there was no formal notification as to whether those had even been reviewed or considered, which was, in fact, incumbent upon the minister to do so. And if there was a review, we believe it's important to show what scientific data based that decision. And if it was decided not to review or amend those gatherings, then what was the evidence, basically, or what was the rationale behind that? We certainly would like to state very clearly that it has certainly been our observation that the religious community has not indeed been treated equitably with other sectors of society from the outset of this pandemic. And we believe that this is something which must be certainly corrected. And we certainly hope in future, and particularly if there is a legal precedent set to this effect, that this will certainly be taken strongly into account by government in any of its future engagements, if we face, God forbid, such a crisis as this again. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Slane. Much appreciated. Can we allow the Gauteng faith-based organization? I have not given the name of the representative. Gauteng faith-based organization.
Yes, Chair. I wrote a message on the group that we are going to send our written submission. Mm-hmm. And then from them, we're able to engage from there. Is that fine, Chair?
Okay. Okay, that's fine. It's fine. It's just that, yeah, you won't have an opportunity to present. We'll engage with your presentation. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Then can I ask Dale Wallace from Open Circle? Dale Wallace from Open Circle. Oh, doesn't look like his name is on the attendees list. It was going to be Pastor Hendrik Mbuyaze from Christ the Foundation Indigenous Churches Association now, who had since
tendered an apology. I think he has connection problems. Then in terms of my list, I'm then left with the South African Council of for Charismatic Churches. And let me hand over to Pastor Lucas Nkosi. Before then, there is six jellies and that I've seen in the platform. It seems as if it's the only person that wants to speak. Pastor Nkosi. Can I ask? What is this now? This heading is very confusing because we are not dealing with the CRL government planning. What's happening? Is this the right document? Oh, it's only paragraph 3. Colleagues, can you hear Pastor Nkosi, or it's only myself who can hear him?
We can't hear him, sir. We can't hear
him. You can't hear him. Maybe Pastor Nkosi, we can hear you. Can you try to?
We can't hear, Chair.
We can't hear Pastor Nkosi.
Okay,
but there's somebody who's saying he can hear everything. I don't know what does he mean.
Okay.
Because we can't hear Pastor Nkosi.
All right. I just lost connectivity a little. Okay. Can you hear me? Yes.
Can I ask one brother Mengezeli to mute his microphone, please?
Amen. Thank you.
Can you switch, mute your microphone, please?
Okay.
The only recognized speaker here is Mr. Pastor Lucas Nkosi. Proceed. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. Yeah, it's just that after the previous engagement now and certain questions that were asked during that CRL performance plan that raise questions which are connected to issues that are related to also what today's agenda is all about.
Now, okay.
Yes. So it is within that context that this document was designed, because it's like when I was listening, there were certain points where I was shocked and where committee members were raising questions and I'm like, by the way, what's happening? So it's within that context, hence, so this document was designed that way. Now, the problem there, you know, with these issues of lockdown and disaster management, it's a question of the CRL involvement in the context of the whole thing because of its constitutional positioning to responding to this matters. I remember some of the portfolio committee members, one of them asked the question, if churches or religious sector did, you know, communicate to the CRL on whatever issues that are troublesome. And the CRL responded by saying that they received nothing except, you know, what they've learned about is complaints that were raised to the government, of which I beg to differ with that position at that time. And hence, I had to communicate to the committee to say some of these answers are not correct, because I've been engaging with the CRL page. Even when you can check the annexure there, there's proof there, you know, from their pages and also their emails, that I've engaged with them, you know, effectively. And sometimes some of the things that were concerning during this Disaster Management Act, you know, implementation, I did flight them, and especially with their communications department, so that they are always alert. You know, I remember, so it's on record there in the annex charts, so that you can see in terms of dates, especially one of the first cases was when, you know, the police stormed at that mosque somewhere in Mpumalanga, insulting the worshippers there, and then brutally so. And so it was a problem. So from time to time, I've been making sure that I do communicate, and I've been making follow-ups to check if these things are taken into consideration. You know, it's after a long time, I think somewhere in beginning of this year, you know, where now I saw just one article that spoke to issue like the cases in I think in Steve Tshwete municipality. I stated and said to the CRL, there's some a violation there of, you know, religious, you know, churches are being abused there. So please attend to that matter, you know, within your structure, so that you educate, you intervene, because I believe constitutionally they need to intervene. And one of those things now that were concerning in the overall and the reason behind the submission was for Parliament, you know, to help us in terms of, you know, Section 2, where it speaks to, you know, if you look at Section 42.3, in summary, it simply says Parliament is the voice of the people, and government, you know, the NCCC have been passing on regulations that were so questionable. And then those regulations which are questionable, it's like they are made in the absence of the voice of the people. And when you look at, you know, these different tiers of the state, that they were made so that there's a balancing of, you know, forces, so that the state should not abuse the citizens, but to serve to the citizens to its maximum. It's like now the voice of the people, which is Parliament, was silenced. And now the executive had now so much uncontrollable power, you know, over citizens and doing things, you know, willy-nilly, even, you know, a lot of bridges of the constitution, like things like Section 36, we spoke to the limitations of rights. I mean, those limitations must be qualified. And a lot of times government, the NCCC has been failing to qualify why should there be limitation of rights. And now we've been crying, you know, tagging the CRL, you know, saying, hey, CRL, hey, yes, something that is within your scope of mandate to deal with, so that you intervene to say, government, hold it. This is not how you handle, you know, people of the faith and things like that. And unfortunately, the voice of the CRL was not there. And I mean, to hear them during that time, you know, when they were submitting their performance plan, you know, I questioned, you know, in terms of now, if it's about performance plan and all those things they were talking about, I was questioning myself. And one of those questions I had in mind is now, how will we measure the CRL performance? And my belief is now the objects of the commission, as alluded both by the Constitution, the Act, and also the mission statement, is where their KPIs must be measured, as in we should tick all those boxes, whether they are meeting their objectives and their functions. And where we needed them the most, which was during this lockdown regulations, I mean, all those objects, where I'm standing, it's like I was questioning them in terms of how did they promote respect for those rights during the lockdown? How did they develop promote and develop peace, friendship, humanity, tolerance, national unity. How did they, establish recognition or recognize religious or their voice? How do they foster mutual respect? How did they, promote rights, and educate and so forth? CRL was quiet. And it's that excuse is there in the annexure. I've been communicating. There's evidence that I've made efforts to make sure that they are in the know. Their communications department knows exactly what, that we spoke to them. So the notion that we did not communicate, issues that, are questionable within the Disaster Management Act now is incorrect. And the other thing in terms of the number three, the case is the president and also the Copter Ministry spoke of the purpose behind this Disaster Management Act and the rule of engagement or the battle plan was the focus on preventing and reducing the outbreak of COVID-19. And we were given the rules of engagement across the board, as spoken by NCCC, as guided by the Department of Health, where we were told that, wear the masks, social distance, sanitizing hands, and minimal movement. And I remember during May, they were gazetted as such. And then one of those things that were added in the context of churches, because there was this argument about singing, and therefore the measurements that we were given in that gazette was 2.5 distancing. And then, so we worked it out, and then after engagements, then when churches were allowed now to go, it was on those grounds. Now, as we continued, especially with the Gauteng government, where we were engaging at least directly to these issues, to saying, but we were from time to time, I remember in three sittings of meetings, we've been asking the province that how is the church doing? And we've been getting positive feedback that the church is doing good. I remember in one of the last meetings where the MEC who was chairing, said something that no, they are even rebuking other people and sectors, saying if the churches can do this, sacrifice this much, who are you? Now, what we have observed, the other imbalances and injustices in the application of the very same Disaster Management Act. Now, you will see some pictures in the annexure there, from beginning from the Minister of Police himself and some of I saw there's a picture there of the Minister of Police, the National Commissioner there, not abiding, by those similar masks issues and so on and so on. But we didn't see a heavy hand upon them except to the religious sector. And then we have seen funerals, by high profile funerals, ministers attended, and then we didn't see the heavy hands, of the police on such, in the name of Disaster Management Act. But where churches were concerned, there was heavy-handedness. We have seen political parties exercising their constitutional right to protest in numbers, and there were no incidences of police brutality, but in religious spaces, I tell you, last time, even the helicopter was there, in Soweto, because it's church. There was no helicopter. In Senegal, there was no helicopter. I mean, even of recent, the court case in KZN, I wanted to see the helicopter. And I wanted to see, I remember even the weeks before that court case there, now Honorable Zigalala, the Premier of KZN, was warning people on how to abide by regulations, and hey, third wave is coming. But he was the first one breaking disaster management regulation, dancing there, and there was no incident. But I tell you, if the issues were about, if it was churches, helicopters would be there, and issues like that. So So CRL has been quiet, and the unfortunate other part was that our voice, which is Parliament, was quiet. Therefore, there was so much abuse of powers, and therefore we feel that as the governed, you know, the executive abused power because there was no checks and balances leveled against them. And hence they were doing as they please. And there's been a lot of breaches. So we see that somehow, as if as the religious sector, we are the target. And then pastors have tried, you know, their ultimate best. We've been to the ground. I've been to malls, because one of those things I do is that of skills development facilitator, and I'm concerned with quality management systems, which is something when we advise churches to reopen, we designed that document so that churches will make sure that the quality assure processes, so that there's no spreading of infections and so forth. And now, as I visited malls in different provinces and funerals and so on, I'm telling you, the churches and religious sector, you know, have been doing a great job. I've been to malls. Disaster management has been violated in malls, in funerals. And it's so funny that even what we are told is science, that, you know, it's scientific. Funerals have been proven, but they are allowed to be super spreaders. But churches, there's no evidence. I remember even in January, the president said something that, you know, shocked me. He's saying, when he was asked, why were churches closed? And he said, no, because of singing. And I said, oh, Mr. President, your singing argument is a May argument, and it was gazetted and resolved with. What are you talking about? And it was so funny that in Good Friday, the president was singing, and I was asking myself, where is the science now? Is it because now it's Easter and therefore now singing? Science, where singing is concerned, has ended. So, hey, we really desire for Parliament to intervene. We've been lacking the voice. The voice of the CRL was absent, and, you know, certain excuses. Like, as I conclude, here's another case that shocked me, which now double shocked me when I heard the presentation previously of the CRL with the committee, that, you know, the South African Human Rights intervened in that Boulders mall incident of Mr. Mahlangu and that mall there, I mean, so promptly. And that space, it was a CRL space, but South African Human Rights promptly responded to that and then resolved that matter so
fast. I think, because
yeah,
that is not a religious matter that they to deal with COVID. Can you deal with their recommendations if you are done?
Okay.
I think you need another day with the CRL. I can see that.
Yeah, no, yes. it's just because I'm so concerned that why these applications, these inconsistencies that are there. But on recommendations, I think Parliament should look into the regulations that are crafted. We need the voice of the Parliament there to speak to the issues, because we see that the executive is really abusing power in that space, because the voice of the people is not there. It's like they are governing without the consent of the governed. And, you know, a Parliament should not only receive reports by the CRL as gospel truth without verification with stakeholders. We appreciate this meeting because, you know, as a follow-up to what was said, you know, at least there's a chance that we can speak for ourselves, you know, in this session, and make a follow-up on those unfinished businesses with the religious sector, and that CRL to employ skills development facilitators to help them in terms of quality management system, because one of those things that happened is that we did not know, we didn't understand, and something that Honorable Zungula you know, dealt with last year during the Indaba, the issue of communication. And lastly, there's a lot of configuration there, but I appreciate, because to some extent I managed to really some of the things to air with them to say, hey, but you are not serving us correctly, then let us be served correctly. But we really need this balancing of and consistency. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Pastor Nkosi. Thank you so much. I'm taking the hands that are there for those that feel. There's no, can I ask Pastor Prudence to mute your microphone, please? Pastor Prudence, mute your microphone. If you want to raise your hand, use the raise hand icon or write on the chat group. But can I plead with you now to mute your microphone? It's a bit disruptive. I've noted Zex Jali. Is Zex still here? Then Zex will be followed by Reverend Silo J. Teboho Mutsiri Haroli. Those are the two hands that I'm using while I'm checking the other ones if there's anyone who has written in the chat group. Zex Jali, are you ready? It seems.
Hello.
Is Zex Jali? Is that Zex Jali?
No. It's Reverend Silo Mutsiri Haroli.
I was going to recognize you are coming after Zex Jali. I'm trying to check
Thank you.
Yeah, I've noted you, Reverend. Zex Jali seems to be nowhere to be found. Over to you, Reverend Mutsiri Haroli. Reverend Mutsiri Haroli.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Greetings to everyone. I'm Reverend Silo Mutsiri Haroli. It's my surname. I'm just a patriotic citizen of South Africa. I'm not here to represent any organization. I just want to ask. Yes, I'm a reverend. I'm a reverend. Yes, I'm a reverend in United Reformed Church.
Yeah, tell us the name of your church. It's very key.
Okay. But at the end, they are going to penalize me because at the end, I'm not supposed to talk on behalf of them. But I just want...
You are speaking on behalf of yourself, Reverend.
Yes, Reverend. Okay. Yes.
So, proceed. Proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. There are a lot of issues that we have seen. Honestly, we have been mistreated as the sector of religious leadership and also the church and also other religious sectors. I just want to ask a question. How is safely is the vaccine? Because we have seen a lot of viral videos happening around globally whereby people are talking about the 5G issues, and then also some of other members are dying. The recent one that I saw is one of the Palestinian high-rank police officer who have just within few minutes just passed away. And then now we have seen that how is our country saying the vaccine is safe, but at the end we have read and watched on our TVs that there are vaccines from J&J that are supposed to be withdrawn. And also, I just want to ask on your opinion as one of the representative and the chairperson on this commission, that while there are mistreatments of the religious sector, what security are we going to have? And then I heard someone was saying, we the religious sectors, maybe we are mistreated because of either of the contribution of economy. I differ on that. because we as the religious sector, we contribute because we are the first, we are members of the country. We buy a grocery, there is a VAT that we contribute. Some of us, we have cars, and some of us, majority specifically, because I believe a lot of religious sectors, leaders, we do have cars. We pay tax out of this contribution of economy, and at the end, we are mistreated. Yes, you understand that, and then I fail to understand that the church have been named and labeled that is a super spreader. And also another last question that I want to ask, and please honestly elaborate. What criteria and statistic of level you reach as the government to tell us that there is an increase of COVID-19 pandemic number that is happening that has created us as the country of South Africa to lead in level 3, as the president just have mentioned just past 6 minutes ago? That is my questions. Maybe I'll make other follow-ups while other people are engaged. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Reverend Mutsiri Karoli, in your own personal capacity. Thanks for the contribution. I think in terms of the attendees, that's the only end. Oh, there is unity in Blessing Network. You must introduce yourself first, because you are not unity in Blessing Network.
Okay, I am Pastor Mukuba. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm Pastor Mukuba, representing the Unity Fellowship Churches. I'm grateful for this opportunity to can be able to engage. I've listened to the other people who have been speaking, and I am grateful that important points are being raised with regard to the impact of the COVID-19 regulations upon the religious community. It is true that some of us, we feel that we are sort of discriminated against. When we see that on each alert level, the numbers of gatherings are determined in a way that is not like in other sectors, as we have seen that other sectors are operating right, and other places are given percentages to operate. But when you come to churches, even though it can be said 50% of the capacity of the building, there is also the restriction where you're going to be told that, okay, 100 people or 50 people, like now the president has just announced 50 people, and we keep on wondering and asking without receiving responses on what is informing this, because just to be told that churches are super spreaders of the virus without any scientific evidence is something else, because it leaves us thinking that because there is no scientific evidence and we are not hearing of stories of any super spreading of the virus in churches, then we are left thinking that these regulations are like anti-religious gatherings. And it really bothers us seeing that really at this time, our people are so stressed up, they're living in anxiety, and they're really suffering. And they really need their leaders, their religious leaders, to be preaching to them a message of hope, to be praying for them. Because when a nation is in crisis, obviously people are expecting to hear from those who take care of them spiritually. But we have seen that the very same places that are life-giving institutions, that are giving hope to communities when they are in dire need are the ones that are so, so limited. And people are going to work every day. They're boarding taxis, they're boarding planes, and they are going to work every day. But when it comes to church, it's like, okay, you can board a taxi, but when you get to church, that is where you are going to contract the virus. And we have seen the heavy-handedness of police towards churches, because I'm here, I want to talk about what happened to our church, which I really believe that, or I really request that it should be investigated. It should be looked into seriously. So I was also expecting that the CRL will get involved in this one, because, I mean, we saw police coming to our church and coming there and shooting people, shooting church members, something that they don't do anyway. They shot even children, young children as young as 5 years old, getting shot, old women, who people who were just holding their Bibles, not posing any danger to anyone. But these people, they got shot at by our police just because we are at church. So we see this hatred, if I may put it that way, towards churches. I can say that because we experienced this firsthand. And after experiencing such violence towards ourselves, then we again ourselves getting arrested, not even being given reasons why you are getting arrested, and then you have to be going to court just because you are a church. And these kind of things that are happening now during this pandemic, they leave us as the church community feeling like really, really, it is like our rights are getting trampled upon. The brutality that we see towards churches, the human rights violations that we are experiencing right now, the abuse of power by those who are empowered by our government to be in power, it is so, so appalling. And I must add that in our church, we saw something that we have never seen being a display towards people who are criminals in our country, because really we have got many criminals who are operating in our country, and we have never seen them an operation that is done towards such people, where you will find that a helicopter comes to church and three nyalas, two water cannons, and about 30 vehicles of police with many, many police officers. Metro police officers, like JMPD Metro police officers. We have never seen this being done against people who are really committing crimes out there, who are murdering people. But we are seeing that during this time of the pandemic, we are seeing that being done towards churches. And we ask our government, what really is going on? It's really these regulations that are set, only set to oppress churches. We really need these matters to be looked into, and we really need as churches to be treated like other citizens of South Africa. Let us not be treated like we are second class citizens. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Pastor Mukuba. I see a hand as well of Pastor Balken Mufamadi. Can I plead with a Pastor Mukuba for her to mute her microphone, please? Thank you. Pastor Mufamadi. Pastor Mufamadi, I've not recognized you. Now, can you unmute your microphone and put your video on so that we proceed? Pastor Balken Mufamadi, your hand is up.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, it's Apostle Balken Mufamadi here.
Yes, proceed.
From can the Word of Life
Ministry. Can we see your face, please? If it's possible, we are in the new normal. We've been dealing with, you've muted
yourself. You must unmute as well. Unmute yourself, Pastor Mfama Dean. If the video cannot come, then unmute yourself. You can proceed so that we save time. Yes. There we go.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. There we go.
Yeah. Treatment of the church. Because the president and the government have opened all the economies in terms of all the sectors. But the church is the only sector that government is not prepared to open in terms of its economy. Yet we as pastors, we've got bills to pay, bonds, houses to pay, and there's no funding for the church. And it's clear that the church is under an attack. We are not using any form of terminology here or dark saying or dark speeches. The church is under an attack from our own government. And it's surprising because we as servants of God have sacrificed a lot. Now, if the church is not being opened, the bills in the church, electricity and water, and many other expenses, where are you expecting us to get it from? So the church is under a severe attack. We are not happy of whatever is happening currently. This is an unfair treatment that is taking place. So we are saying that the entire spread of the COVID-19, actually, the church is contributing a lot in terms of praying against this COVID-19. But at the very same time, the great persecution, we are receiving it now from the government itself. This is unfair. You are able to open liquor from Monday to Friday. They can open from in the morning and also in the evening. With us, it's only a service of 2 hours on Sunday. And according to government, that is still a lot. And I don't understand. You respect liquor so much that the people, you can open it from Monday to Friday. But with us as the church, only 2 hours on Sunday, you give us limited numbers. But with those people who are drinking, whether people are going to pick and pay or to check us, whichever, so there's no limitation. The only limitation is the church. I don't know how you see it. I know you as I knew you from church very well from home. But I want to believe that you should have more sympathy, you know, for the church, for the body of Christ. We are saying in terms of priority, government of South Africa is not putting God first. God is number last. And I don't know how can the Almighty God be able to bless our nation if God is number last. I mean, even you can check other America. We are not the only country in the whole world that is faced with COVID-19. America had put the interest of the church first, you know, with no limitation. But here, the church is under a severe attack. We are not happy, and we are saying to government, please, we are not happy. Do something. This even 15 number of today, whatever number, I did not listen to the president. I was in another meeting. But I want to believe that the numbers, for sure, there's more restriction on the church. We are saying open up. Even 50%, open 50% for the church. May the Lord richly bless you.
Thank you, Pastor Mfamadi. There's a hand of Pastor Alfred Mugwera. Then he will be followed by Pastor Baka Mengezeleli. Can I give Pastor Alfred Mugwera? You can mute your video now, Pastor Mfamadi, and mute your microphone now that you've finished speaking. I want to give this opportunity to Reverend Alfred Mugwera.
Thank you.
Good evening. Your microphone, Pastor Mufamadi, please.
Yes. Okay, I'm doing that.
I'm still waiting. Sorry, Reverend Mugwera, I'm waiting for Pastor Mufamadi to mute. You are not yet muted. Mute both your video and microphone, and the microphone as well. It's a new normal. You'll bear with me, Reverend Mugwera. It's your time now. You can proceed.
Good evening, everyone. Chairperson, Faith Mutambi, we are concerned about what is happening to the church. If my mind serves me well, the church has always been on the forefront of the struggle in the past. The church actually assisted in the economic collapse of the previous regime when it was difficult. And the church is the one that kept the home fires burning when most comrades were out of the country. And through the church, a lot of things were achieved. Now, it is of concern when we see that the taverns near our places remain open most of the time with unmasked people, especially in Soweto where we live. People don't even bother with masks. There are weddings going on. The cops just drive past and they are not bothered by anything like that. But now, come the church, we are being attacked and we are told to do certain things that actually limit the proper execution of the word of God and all other functions aligned to it. This is of great concern to us as we feel that the church is the one that is actually being sidelined irrespective of the role that was played by the church in the past and the role that is currently being played by the church come election time. Now, we would appreciate a review of the position of government regarding church services. The 2 hours allocated is just not enough on a Sunday. We need to pray in the week. We need time to be allocated for people who are distressed, who have lost their jobs through COVID-19 or any other economic condition, to get assistance, to get prayers, their spirits to be uplifted, and to put a lot of positivity into them. These are people who may actually even go on to the crime spree if there is no divine intervention. These are people who could easily lose their lives and even murder or even kill their family members because of the economic pressures. We plead that the church be given priority. This country would not have been what it is if it was not for the church. Remember how many times a civil war or civil wars have been averted in this very country through prayer. God has been good to this country. And even people from outside actually say it. And we plead with government, especially our president, who we know from the days of yore that he led Christian movements, that he should consider that the church must play a very important role during this distressful time. I thank you.
Thank you so much, Reverend. Can I hand over to Reverend Baka Mengezeleli? Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity. Are you hearing me? No.
Before that, can I plead? Yeah, now we are better. He is muted. I was pleading with the previous speaker to mute his microphone. He has done that. You can, okay, then you can proceed, Reverend Mengezelele. Proceed now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and for recommend you for creating this platform of engaging with these issues as the religious sector. And of course, I want to mention that I've joined the debate late. I don't know exactly what other issues that have been raised, but I think there are some certain issues that I wanted to raise, in particular the issue of state brutality, which manifests itself under the cover of enforcing disaster management regulations when it comes to churches. That I don't want to dwell on it. Many people have spoken about it. It is a great concern. And then the second thing was the issue of the issue that I wanted to raise in particular, Chairperson, was the issue of consultation, which I think the portfolio committee and government in general needs to address it. Because whenever there's going to be a change in terms of which level are we going to, there will be consultation with various stakeholders and sector organizations. But when it comes to the religious sector, there's a trend that has been emerging that there is some kind of selective representation of the church voice or the religious sector voice within the government. What I mean is that there's a complaint generally that government speaks to those religious leaders that they think they are actually rubbing shoulders with them. And in most cases, those leaders are very few, and the president will say, I've consulted with religious sectors. But when you come in to investigate exactly who are these people that government says it has consulted, and who are these people that are speaking on behalf of the religious community in South Africa, you find that it is few people, five or six of them, who are seen to be the voice of the religious sector in South Africa. And I think this thing has caused too much concern amongst the religious sector, because it reflects like that government in one way or the other is actually fueling divisions within the religious sector, in the sense that it that kind of an arrangement creates some kind of a divide and rule situation, because there's no assurance, or the government does not take any efforts to ensure that there is fair representation of religious sector organization or leaders to consult with. I know that this is a matter that we have discussed as the religious sector at some stage, and I think government must look into that in terms of how it broadens the consultation with the religious sector to ensure that there's maximum participation of all these leaders. So that's the issue that I wanted to raise, Chairperson, that at least the portfolio committee should consider reviewing its approach in consulting with the religious sector and ensuring that there's fair representation whenever there's going to be a new decision or a review of decision. Because it cannot be fair to say the religious sector have agreed on the 50 member participation in church services, and there's a claim that this is what the religious sector has agreed upon. So those are the issues that the chairperson should look at as well. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you. Before I allow it's not about what Reverend Mutiri has done to me to say he has asked me a question and he's put on the group that whether I will be able to answer that. Don't worry, that question will be answered because we have got colleagues who work for government. Ourselves, we are a portfolio committee of parliament. Then, but let me allow honorable, give this privilege to, then you can mute your microphone, yeah, and lower your hand, Reverend Mengezele, now that you've spoken, so that we don't repeat. Honorable, sir, is there anything that you want to say before I allow the colleagues to ask these colleagues from the church questions first, from the various religious leaders? Is there anything that you want to say, Honorable? Let me give you that privilege, Honorable Swart.
You are very kind, Chairperson. And firstly, my apologies for arriving a bit late. I missed your opening comments. But I think what is very important is, from what I understand, and very briefly, literally 3 minutes, is from what I understand, you emphasize the important role that religious communities play in our country. And this, as you know, I'm a lawyer, is in accordance with what the Constitutional Court has found, where Judge Sachs said that in an open and democratic society, the religious beliefs held by the great majority of South Africans must be taken seriously. And he also said that where reasonably possible, the state must seek to avoid putting believers to extremely painful and intensely burdensome choices of being true to their faith whilst respectful to the law. Now, Chairperson, we've heard tonight of great concerns that the religious communities have expressed about the impact of the lockdowns. And I think, sadly, we as Parliament are unable to have an impact on the regulations, and so our oversight is very limited. And so I welcome some of the private members' bills to re-look at the Disaster Management Act and the regulations. We need, as some of the speakers have said, to exercise our voice because we are representatives of the people. And so it's been greatly disturbing to hear the testimonies and to hear the heavy-handed approach. And myself, as a member of the Justice Committee, I'm also taking up with the Justice Committee the impact that, as where we've heard of what's happened at the churches, where we've seen the heavy-handed, it is disgraceful that police have been shooting communities. And I'm sure all members of Parliament will be in agreement with that, when we don't even see that action taking place against criminals. Chairperson, I think we will engage, the members of the committee will engage, but it is sad that the CRL and the Human Rights Commission have not taken up the fight of church leaders, of religious organizations across the board, when they play such a key role as all of us. I'm so aware that there are so many believers in Parliament of all faiths, but when we see the impact of prayer, and as you know, I was one of the first to get COVID-19, and I'm grateful for the prayers that so many people expressed. Many members of Parliament wrote to me and said they're praying for me. So we understand the role of prayer. We understand the role of our religious communities in assisting people with prayer, those people that are going through a tough time with physical health, with mental struggles because of losing jobs. And so, Chairperson, I think this engagement, I want to commend you and the committee for this engagement to allow members of the religious communities to come and express their concerns. And again, what is deeply concerning is the lack of consultation and the role that we can't even play, members of Parliament, when it comes to even tonight's decision by the President and by the Executive. And sadly, that is regretful from a legal perspective. If you have the state of emergency, Parliament plays a greater role with the state of emergency than we do with that. So, Chairperson, may I just implore you and members of the committee to really listen very carefully to what the members of the religious communities, the churches, are saying. They play such a key role in society. They're the biggest NGOs. And let's see what we can do as Parliament, as the voice of the people, to hear their fight, to come to their assistance, and to hold the executive to account as constitutionally we are required to do. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I really appreciate your allowing me to express those views.
Thank you so much, Honorable Swart. Your input is much appreciated. We also appreciate the mere fact that
whenever we deal with these matters of religion, you take time, despite your busy schedules, to attend our committee meeting. That's why I said I must give you this opportunity. We are also seeing your commitment towards the sector. Thank you so much. Colleagues, we have got 20 minutes to end the meeting. Are the issues that based on tonight's presentation that you need clarity on? I'm asking my colleagues, what's gonna happen on Thursday? The department is going to respond on these issues that have been raised. I don't want to put the deputy minister on the spot now on the question that was raised by you, Reverend, I'm trying to get your name, Mutiri. It's Reverend Mutiri. I'll tell you the other, Carol. But the department will be able to respond to that because they are sitting in the National Command Council. That's why you even had the apology of the minister tonight. She was there in that meeting prior to the president addressing the nation. Then, so that question of yours, the government will be able to respond. The government representatives in this committee will be able to respond to it. Don't worry about that. You must make sure you come back to the meeting on Friday. And I believe you heard our opening remarks to say, as a parliament, we'll be failing on our oversight duty if we don't consider these matters, as Honorable Sowore said now earlier, to say these are matters that are affecting our people, and we are the portfolio committee that is supposed to attend to this matter, because the Disaster Management Act, the minister responsible report to this portfolio committee. And I should think we've done it in precisely on cities coming to account on this matter. Hence, we got your complaint, in particular those that wrote to us earlier, like the likes of Michael Sen for RSA, because that's why we felt the need to engage with you. So this meeting is proceeding on Thursday at 19 hours. We'd like to hear the commission's comment on this one. And moving forward, I should think we must ask Pastor Nkosi, and also what Honorable Sowore said now, the issue of the Human Rights Commission in future, will have to then invite the Human Rights Commission as well. In my introductory remarks, for those who might have come late, I've indicated that now as Parliament, we are, luckily enough, Honorable Groenewald, he has submitted a private member's bill in Parliament on the amendments of the Disaster Management Act. And as this committee, we had already deliberated on these matters, and then we had agreed that this bill must be subjected to public participation. Cesar, Honorable Cesar, now that you are in mute, we agree that, sorry about that, you've been battling to log in. It's one of the disciplined colleagues. So what I was still saying is that as Parliament, we are going to soon publish that draft bill for public comments. And I think it's high time yourselves, as the religious sector, to participate in this lawmaking process so that in future you don't experience what you've been experiencing. And I further said that we as the committee, we are the custodian of the Disaster Management Act. And then it's our commitment at this committee to make sure that we have a legislation that responds adequately
and justify the national disaster without infringing unreasonably on the rights and freedom of citizens, as some of you has put in. That's why we said we want your input in this regard. And then what we are doing today, we'll also have to infuse that, because this is part of our minutes. We have received your written submission as and when we start to continue on the bill, but we'll also want you to fully participate as the religious sector. Having said that, I see there's a hand by Honorable Brink who want to say something or ask question in response to what we've heard tonight. And I hope all the presenters are still here. If it's clarity seeking question, Honorable Brink will deal with that. And I also suspect that Honorable Keza would like to also say something. Over to you, Honorable Brink.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
I just want to underscore some points that have been made. I think a crucial thing that we're missing in our current law is the opportunity of South Africans, including religious sector, to make contributions that are then considered as to the content of disaster management regulations. And I think it's because the Disaster Management Act was written for different circumstances. It was never written to be extended over and over and over again over such a long period of time. It was meant for a limited period of time, and we never contemplated when this bill was passed in 2002 the possibility that the government can be run for more than a year under disaster management regulations. And I think what we should hear from the religious sector is the complaint that there is no formal way for them to speak to government and then to get a reply, as you would, for instance, if draft laws were considered by Parliament, or if ordinary regulations were published in the Gazette for comment. And that's a defect that we must address. And I think that requires a response, even before we look at private members' bills, that requires response from the department. And then, Chairperson, I think the other important point is the criticism raised by a few others who said that the CRL can't just wring their hands of the situation. The CRL are there in part to represent religious rights. And you remember, Chair, when I put the question to the CRL to say, what representations did you receive about this matter? They said, oh, well, we don't know. Well, maybe government received things. And I don't think that is adequate. And I think the CRL needs to tell us whether they are, in fact, representing this constituency. It's an important point. But then, Chairperson, again, I want to thank you who agreed to place this matter on the agenda. I think you've been keeping up a very, very diligent thoughtful and responsible agenda as to the work of this committee. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Brink. Then it will be Honorable Groenewald, followed by Honorable Keza, if he has settled now. Oh, you want me to start with you, Honorable Keza? Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Keza will come after you. Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, excuse my camera again. It's due to my internet connection. I am busy upgrading it, so near future, you will be able to see me.
So you are going to 5G?
Unfortunately not, ma'am. 5G is way too fast for us, but I have to upgrade from 2 meg line, but we'll have a faster line.
Okay.
Chairperson, I want to to agree with Honorable Brink as well, and then just highlight a few things that I think that the department that's responding on Thursday must respond to as well. Is and as a lot of the presenters said, is why is the religious community handled differently than normal private business? If you look in the concept of churches as well, they are doing a lot of the work that some of the private sector is doing as well. And I think they must come and explain to us why there is a difference between the, can I say, religious sector and the private sector, and the handling of it in the Disaster Management Act. So, Chair, I just want to add that. And secondly, to say that, and I think that's the thing about the Members' Bill as well, is to say that there has to be more accountability. Accountability from executive as well as from the department side, especially when questions are raised on how it's being answered and if it's been answered. I know 4SA, for example, one stage did struggle to get some basic answers when there wasn't clarity in terms of the first disaster management regulations that was published. So, Chairperson, that's what I want to add, and I want to thank you. Let's keep talking about this. I think this is quite important.
Thank you so much, Honorable Groenewald. Honorable Schleiser, over to you, colleague. He has been battling with network today. Honorable Schleiser? I don't see any other hands from the colleagues. So I should think the way forward is proposed by the two colleagues does suffice for now. We are going to reconvene on Thursday. Some might have heard me saying Friday. And thanks to all of you who have submitted your email addresses. I could see as and when we're discussing, some of you have heeded to my call for you to submit your emails, address and contact details so that then the link can be sent to you. And I think we've managed because we are left now with almost 7 minutes to come to the end of our meeting at 10. So the reality is that now we are at level 3, as announced by the president, and some of the issues that you've been raising, they are there. And then from where we are seated, as Honorable Brinke said, the need for the review of the Disaster Management Act. For some of you, what we are having now is tantamount to the state of emergency. And then those of you who had an opportunity to read the State of Emergency Act is no longer apply in this democratic dispensation. It's old and it needs to be amended as it came before the Disaster Management Act. And then because there's the issue that deals with natural disaster like the COVID pandemic, and then such things need to be removed from that act, or if it's obsolete, it has to be declared obsolete. And then our disaster management at the same time has to also be reviewed and then amended so that we can also address these issues. What I can assure you, as and when we are closing this meeting, the mere fact that we called you as well, and then we could have listened to 4SA alone, but we had realized that we are seeing these things that are happening in our communities as well. And then it's as responsible public representatives, that's why we feel we need to continually engage so that at the end of the day, we are even sitting now because we are on recess. We are sitting this late night because we've considered this matter very seriously. And on our part, I should think this was not a talk shop. You have expressed your views. We have heard you. And then as responsible public representatives, I think we need to do something about it. And this is a matter that's ongoing. And I think having engaged with us tonight, it also gives us more reason why this Disaster Management Act has to be amended so that it doesn't infringe with the rights and freedoms of people, so that all these other issues that you've raised, you have, some of you have some of you have raised these issues sharply, and I should believe then we'll have to deal with that. So let's end it here for tonight. From where I'm seated, I would like all of us to come back, all of us who are in this platform, to come back on Thursday evening, and then so that we continue to deal with these matters. Yeah, and then you'll have all the responses. I'm glad that the DG of Traditional Affairs is here, the head of the National Disaster Management Center. She's here, very capable, and I think she was taking all your notes, and the principal is here. Maybe let me just allow a deputy minister to say just something to say to assure these colleagues who are in our midst that we've heard them, and you'll be able to respond. Let me give you the 3 minutes, then I will close the meeting. DM, so that even the colleagues can see you.
Yes, Chairperson, can you see me?
Yes, I wanted to see you as well, DM. I haven't seen you for quite some time.
Yeah, I'm busy with the municipalities and busy with traditional leaders now. Fire. Obviously, also to some extent with the religious sector too. me and Prof. Musoma were in some meetings throughout the past 2-3 weeks also. No, thanks very much, Chairperson. I think I've been listening to the inputs, and likely some of them we have received, and some obviously came in the meeting, and also listening to the honorable members around the Disaster Management Act, also around issues that needs to be reviewed and then looked at. And on Thursday, when we come back, obviously, with the minister, we'll have looked at them adequately, and so that we can respond comprehensively to some of the issues raised. And also then that the sector feels that it is under siege, there's been very much not consulted enough under this engagements on how to deal with the pandemic. And as we do so, obviously there has been some consultations, but not everybody could have not been included, probably because there's so many bodies that represent the sector. So some of them, I'm seeing them for the first time, because particularly in the Christian side of the sector, there's quite a number of the groupings. Well, as we're engaging with the CRL and other, the department, we realize that the Christian sector has a number of forums or associations or institutions and so forth. And I think more and more will still be coming forth. We just really have to engage with that particular area and see how, when we consult, we do it in a way that really encompasses everybody. And I think it's one big challenge. But when you go to other faiths, obviously, you find that they are as organized, probably because percentage-wise in terms of the number of the representation, they are smaller. They are as organized and then it's easier once you go to such a body that you get everything that is happening in that particular sector. But consultations have been done with the president. This time there will be engagements around issues of the pandemic. Before the pandemic, we had Nelson Mandela, who had organized what we call the presidential working group with the religious sectors, and then the religious sector had been participating in that meeting, raising issues that affect the nation, whatever are the issues at this point. Or the president will also consult the sector based on some issues that are happening in the nation. And when the pandemic happened, there was that rush to go for level 5 and 4, but later then it was acknowledged that we needed to consult a bit of sectors, and the sports sector, the sport federations, the religious sector, the business, and then so forth. So that engagement has been going on. And I think on Thursday when we respond, we'll be able to indicate the engagement themselves. And beyond the presidential working group, then the NCC, through the president also as the chair, will always have an engagement with the traditional leaders, with the religious leaders, and also engage around what are the ideas, what are the views. Even at the time when there were no gatherings allowed in churches and synagogues and what have you, the president was then persuaded by such meetings where he says, please open up, we can then begin to also ensure therefore that the protocols on health are adhered to. And then there was then the number element that was open gradually, but depending on the number of the virus and the cases that are reported, then will then keep on reducing up and down. But I think the other evidence that the religious leaders were asking today was the scientific evidence that we are using to base our arguments on the management of the pandemic and the regulations that we keep on putting up. What are the scientific evidence that we need to put? We'll bring those particular aspects and so that we could then compare notes. There are also an issue that was raised that by the SA4 forum were saying that they've done their own research, they've looked all over the world, they didn't find any sector of the religion as to why we are seeing the super spreader. We'll also bring that particular evidence and the responses to it, and comprehensively. I think the team of the department and the disaster management center, they are here from COGTA itself, will be able then to really put in a response package, and we hope therefore that with it we take notes and we respond to the issues. But those areas that are areas of concern that needs for consideration by the minister to take to the cabinet and to the National Command Council on Coronavirus, the minister will be able to take a lead and those issues. So thank you very much, Chair. Let me not go comprehensively on the issues as we'll be studying the inputs, the contributions, and the points that have been made in this particular meeting. And thank the religious leaders for really coming out and seeing Parliament as a parliament of the people, as a voice of the people, and all. And indeed it is, where everybody can say anything and everything, so that then parliamentarians can take some of the issues on board and then champion them in the legislation processes that always are there. And I think the private bill, as you said, we are also considering it. We will then take guidance also from it in terms of what are the areas of the Disaster Management Act that are troublesome. Thank you very much, Chair. With those few minutes, thanks for giving me the opportunity. But otherwise, on Thursday, we'll be there and to deal with the issues comprehensively with the minister. Thanks.
So I had already said that
we're going to reconvene on Thursday. So we are looking forward to meeting all of you on Thursday. The link will be sent to you so that you hear as the department and the commission respond. I wonder if it's too late, Shirin, to can also check with the Human Rights Commission to join us. We can try that tomorrow and check if it's not possible, failing which we can then organize another day. That brings us to the end of our meeting today. I want to thank almost most of you, especially of our guests. You have been very great participants. They were minimum, but I should think most of you were able to then cooperate with the decorum. Thank you so much. Have a blessed evening. And then those of you who were there in 1976 and those of you who have enjoyed the benefits of the 1976 uprising, you must enjoy your youth day. And whatever we do, let's remember those who died for the liberation of this country. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And then keep on praying for this country and for the pandemic to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The meeting's adjourned.